This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Welcome to this edition of The Escape Hour. In the studio with me today is helping us out on the tools is Adam Samuel. Thank you so much for coming in and helping us today.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
First time we're on the radio together, actually, other than the news.
We're losing our virgin.
Yeah, we are.
Virgin radio virginity.
Yeah. It won't be messy. That's okay. and also back after a short break is Fiona Brooke. Welcome back.
Thanks, Tad.
You're literally fresh off the plane.
Fresh off the plane this morning.
How was it?
Fantastic.
Good.
Well, the plane ride was...
It made it, and that's one positive side, isn't it?
Yeah, it was a very smooth plane ride. Flew in from Tokyo this morning.
Well, what's sort of the topic of our show is Japan, and we're going to talk about your adventures and what you ate, what you didn't eat, what you liked,
I ate everything.
That's good, yeah. But before we get into all that... What's going on in the world? I mean, you know, we still have this yes vote thing happening. From my own point of view, I forget actually which day it was, but I walked out of my apartment building one day and I see a big no in the sky. Mm. And I have to say that really pissed me off.
Yeah.
Yes, there's another side to the debate. I get that. But, you know, when it's in your face like that, I think it's a bit off and not really on from my point of view. But, you know, it happened. And I there was a few sort of interesting things on social media that came out of that.
I was tracking that while I was away.
Yeah. And so there's a few fun things that were done with the photo. And, you know, instead of saying no, it was on and that kind of thing. So clever, which is good. But, yeah.
Well, I mean, there is a lot of different sides to the story, and the no campaign is quite outspoken.
Absolutely,
as is the yes campaign, quite outspoken.
Yeah, and obviously we're on the yes side, but
obviously we're on the yes side. Well, I mean, the good news, of course, seems to be that over 62% of the people have voted, which is massive, and apparently more than voted in the island.
Yes.
Referendum.
Yep.
So, you know, things are very positive, and then you've got, you know, politicians who are weighing in and trying to politicize it and say, oh, yes, we feel very strongly that it's going to get up.
Yep.
But they're really only doing, I mean, we all have to be very, we already are suspicious of politicians,
Absolutely.
As we know.
Yeah, it's just natural.
But there are lots of positive signs, but we still have a way to go.
We do, yeah.
I mean, the exciting thing is that the announcement will be right near my birthday.
Oh,
so,
that's exciting.
You know, I
party
mean,
at Fiona's house.
Party at my house.
Let's do that.
I got a great party house too.
Oh, good.
I'm really, I hate looking at statistics.
Yeah.
And I'm very anti that because, like we said, with Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, we were like, oh, this man's not going to get in. It's going to be a landslide to Hillary and look what happens. So I'm not saying anything. It's not over until, well, the fat lady sings or the, you know, it closes and the results are announced on the 12th of November.
Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly right. And it is one of those things where it can go either way and it is scary and it seems like it's taking a long time to get to that point. But either way, we'll have to just wait and see and just deal with it, I think. Speaking of Donald Trump, I saw a T-shirt the other day, which I've actually purchased one for myself.
Uh-huh.
And it says Free Melania on it. I loved it. So I got one.
Well, of course, while I was away in a hotel room in Tokyo, I actually had CNN and BBC to watch, which I always love. I become a bit addicted to it.
Yeah.
I'm in the hotel room and, you know, just...
It's also the only English you get on the TV stations over there.
I hadn't been able to see any English for a while. Yeah. And, you know, it was fantastic getting into the depths of some more of the details around... I mean, you know, of course, some people could say there's enough news about Trump, but it was good to get a little bit more in-depth analysis or stuff that's going on in the US that we don't hear about here at all.
Puerto Rico, you know, the fact that they're suffering, you know, after the recent hurricane and there's just no aid getting to them. And because it's Puerto Rico is part of the United States, but it's a territory, it's not a state.
That's right.
And
just like the US Virgin Islands.
Yes,
where
that's right.
In today's paper, Donald Trump said that he had a wonderful conversation with the president of the US Virgin Islands.
He actually
had a conversation with the governor and someone had to say, Mr. President, you're the president of that island. But see, this is how different. I mean, I haven't been to Japan, so I'm really looking forward to hearing about your experience and what you've discovered. But so you're in a hotel room watching CNN. I really love those weird and wacky Japanese game shows.
Oh, well, you know, look,
I love those really.
I did watch a couple of those. They are really funny. I mean, you can see some of those on TV in Australia, of course, at late night sort of SBS on stuff like that.
So I'm doing at 2 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday night and sitting out at the bars.
Yeah, I did watch some pretty wacky Japanese TV as well. And, of course, Japanese advertising is just nutso, hilarious.
Do you know what else I love? I love Japanese horror films. They are scary.
Well, you know, they have a great tradition of horror and spooky stories. I mean, there's a fantastic writer by the name of Quaidan.
Yeah.
Now, of course, I'm going to show my level of ignorance because I don't remember when he was writing, but it was early in the, I think it's like late 18th century, early 19th century. Quaidan wrote some incredible Japanese ghost stories that just make your hair stand up.
Yeah, well, even that film, The Ring, was originally a Japanese film.
Yeah, and I heard that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was. I saw the Japanese episode and was never going to go back for more after that. That was enough scare.
Yeah,
for me.
It's pretty amazing, you know. But yeah, so there's lots of things that we actually get from Japan that you don't actually realize that it's quite an influence on all of us.
Well, it is. I mean, I think the incredible thing about Japan is that it's been going through waves of, you know, its economy has gone down over the last few years. When I was there, the president Abe, of course, not remembering his last name, has just called a snap election because he is trying to get a mandate on how they're going to deal with North Korea.
Yeah.
I hope it works for him because it backfired on Theresa May when she tried to get a mandate.
Yeah.
Anyway, so with the way that they electioneer in Japan in the few days that we were there since he announced it was they have little buses with loudspeakers and good-looking girls waving out of the buses and these loudspeakers.
Just putting out the propaganda.
And I'm like, well, at this point I'm glad I don't understand Japanese because I don't know if I really want to hear that propaganda. But that was the way that they
There's nothing like drunk businessmen who just stumble out of karaoke at 1 o'clock in the morning, want to see cute girls on a bus.
Exactly. I did have a funny interaction in a newish neighbourhood I'd walked into and I was a big fan. And we were walking home from a bar and there was maybe six slightly drunk people and the young drunk men came up to us and they were like, "Hey, how's it going? We want to go out with you, pretty ladies." And we were like, okay.
No.
What happens in Japan stays in Japan.
Well, you have heard about what happens when people go out, Japanese go out during the evenings.
No.
I don't know if I've died. So basically, I have had friends that have lived in Japan and what happens is you go out with your co-workers and everyone gets really, really, really smashed.
Right.
And there is inappropriate things that happen during the course of an evening. And when you get to work the next day, nothing is said.
Right.
So you're
it's like
not
the first rule of Fight Club.
Yeah, is that right? It's very interesting.
What's the first rule of Fight Club?
No one talks about Fight Club.
There you go.
Right. Well, so, there you go.
First rule of Japanese karaoke, no one talks about.
Yeah, no matter how inappropriately one of your co-workers acts towards you, the next day you just it's not mentioned.
Hi, my name is Stephen K. Amos, and you're listening to Australia's gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
Welcome back to the Escape Hour. In the studio with us today is Adam Samuel on the tools. Thank you again for joining us.
Pleasure.
And
I love being here.
Fiona Brooke back from Japan, and our topic today is
Japan.
Before we went to that short break, we were talking about some fun in Japan.
Japan is so much fun.
What sort of inappropriate things, like just unmentionable things, like just things
probably unwanted sexual advances.
Right, okay.
Usually.
And that's
I don't think it's about how badly you sang karaoke.
Right.
But, I mean, there is a certain level of repression within that culture, and that repression is released when a lot of sake is consumed, and inappropriate behaviour happens on those occasions, and then the next day, no one says anything.
So it's kind of like a rite of passage, in a way?
Um,
Like, what age frames are we talking about that are doing that kind of thing? Like, just young ones? Or?
I think it could be young and old.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think there would be any age break, age difference on that.
Did it happen to you while you were there? You just can't tell.
We drank a lot of sake. It is true. They have, of course, this wonderful thing called the sake overflow. When you go into an izakaya and you ask for sake, they bring it to you in a little lacquerware box. The glass sits in the box. The glass is, you know, like maybe 10, 12 centimetres high. They fill the glass of sake and they overflow it into the box.
Are you supposed to drink what's in the box as well?
You can drink what's in the box or you can take what's in the box and then put it back into your glass. But, you know, you sink five of those and you're well on your way.
That's one of the things I love about Japan. And I know you went to the region where sake is quite popular. Mm. And we'll talk about that in a minute. But there's always a bit of ceremony with the way things are served or the way things are done. And there's always these nice little dishes and things like that, like boxes or whatever that go with it as well. They've been designed and probably around for centuries. But everything has a reason, it seems, when it comes to the way something's presented or served or even cooked.
Well, there's a great deal of tradition in the in the preparation of, and you know, when you sit down to a meal, you often have, you could have up to 10 or 11 little mini bowls of things right in front of you. I mean, we really went to town exploring Japanese pickles.
How good's
that?
Oh
my God, Japanese pickles.
Well, if there's one reason to go to Japan, it's
you
the pickles.
Can, pickled anything. Yeah. And so I am going to go to my nearest Japanese supermarket and shop up on Japanese pickles. But, you know, I mean, one of the great things to do in Japan is eat.
Yes.
If you don't like food, you know, go somewhere else where the food's not so important.
Yeah,
but in Japan, it's just all about eating.
Well, talking about your trip, Japan is in the Northern Hemisphere, so it's about a 11-hour flight.
It's a 10-hour flight or 9.5-hour flight. Yep. The time difference when I first arrived there was only 1 hour. But, of course, when daylight savings came out in Australia, it was for 2 hours.
Yep.
They don't have daylight savings that I know of in Japan. We flew into Tokyo.
Yep.
Then we took a very fast train to meet our friends who by that point were in Kyoto.
Right. And the trains can be pretty confusing in Japan.
It is an incredibly, but by the same token, you know, they've got a lot more English signage these days.
Right, okay.
I mean, Japan over the last few years has certainly come under fire for not having enough English signage. They have a massive tourist industry, and so they've really pulled it together, and so there's a lot more English signage.
That's good. I remember when I was going in out of Japan, there was like none, and this was quite a few years ago.
It has changed a lot. So, you know, you're on a train, there'll be an English announcement and a Japanese announcement, or they will have, you know, on the manifest, it'll be in Japanese and then it'll be in English.
Right.
So, you know, it is much easier to get around now.
And also the local people, you know, if they see you struggling, they will come to your help and your rescue and try as best they can to get you on the right train or the right platform or whatever it is.
Absolutely. You can ask anyone in Japan. You could be looking for a restaurant. You can stop someone in the street and, you know, 9 times out of 10, they will make a phone call to try and find it. They will walk you up the street.
Yeah.
They will stop another Japanese person and ask them, do you know where this place is?
Yeah.
There, I mean, I had a woman, I got off at a train station. This was, because this is my third time to Japan, so another time I was there. I was trying to find a taxi at a train station and I was with a friend and we were just sort of walking along with our bags, kind of obviously looking like we were looking for something. And this woman came racing up to us and she was waving to us madly because she'd already hailed a taxi for us.
Oh, that's nice.
Wow.
She was like, taxi, you need taxi. And then she'd even got one for us.
That's amazing.
They're really divine, lovely people.
And it's safe too.
Very safe.
It's one of the safest places I've ever been to. And, you know, it's...
Well, in fact, one of my friends commented when we were there, we were sitting in a cafe and, you know, you've got the bag boxes. So they have a little basket at the bottom of your table where you put your bags because they don't like bags on the ground. So you put, and then that goes under the table. Now, of course, if you're in Spain, you have to eat with your bag on your lap for like the entire time.
Wow.
So it's very relaxed. But getting back to the public transport, wow, efficiency.
Yeah.
You miss a train, you don't panic. There's going to be another one.
Yep.
And the other hilarious thing, of course, is you get downstairs to the platform and don't get on a train thinking that that's, you say you're 3 minutes early. don't get on that train because that's not your train, because that train's going to leave and then your train's going to arrive 2 minutes later.
Yeah.
So
on time.
Yeah. They arrive on time. They leave on time.
Yeah.
Although we hilariously didn't look into the correctly into the train to the airport, and we got the slow train to the airport by mistake.
Okay.
I mean, fortunately, we had plenty of time.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
So the public transport is incredible. The trains are amazing. So the best way, of course, to travel through Japan is to take get a Japan Rail Pass.
And you get that before you leave? Is that the best
yes,
way to do that?
You can only use them if you buy them before you leave.
Right. Okay.
So there are a number of agencies in Melbourne, in the CBD, and I'm sure in other places where you go and you sit down and you talk to a lovely Japanese person and they'll give you explanations.
Yep.
And you can buy a 7-day, 14-day, or 21, or I'm sure even probably longer,
right.
Rail pass for the JR. It allows you access on the JR trains, which are the all of the most of the big inter...
Where the commuter kind of everyday train sort of thing?
You know, all the fast trains except for the Nozomi train, which is the super-duper fast train.
And the fast one, the bullet ones, are the Shinkansen.
The Shinkansen, yeah. So in some cases when you're in a regional area and you're catching a little tiny little local train...
Yeah.
You'll probably have to pay for that, but it covers a large portion. And then when you're in Tokyo, it allows you free transport on any JR railway lines.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So it is a bit confusing because in Tokyo you've got two or three different railway systems, but they all interconnect. And so, you know, you can use your JR pass on a couple of them, which is really helpful. And then the best way to get around is just get a little Suica card, which is... a little, you know, public transport card, and it's just you're in and out. The most hilarious thing is the amount of stairs you will climb transferring stations.
That's a lot of them.
Sounds like Paris.
it's like a, you know, any international subway system.
You don't want to do it with a lot of luggage, that's for sure.
No, you definitely. No. I mean, although they do have elevators and escalators. Yeah. But
no,
you know,
use the stairs. It's good exercise, good cardio for the day.
It is. That's what
all
I always.
The sake you've had and everything else,
and all the food that you've eaten, and all the egg sandwiches that you'll consume. It's just endless. The food is exquisite.
And is the public transport in Japan pricey compared to what we have here, or is there something someone needs to budget for before they're going to go on the trip?
Look, you know, your average trip on a subway will be 230-260 yen.
Okay.
The yen is currently at around about 75 to 80 cents.
Okay.
So, you know, about $3. So it would not too bad.
Yep.
And the bullet trains are expensive.
Yeah.
So we caught we had a very short wait. We got off the plane. We had to very quickly catch the fast train into Tokyo to then change trains to another line to then change trains to... So we had three very quick changes. And we wanted to get to Kyoto that night. And so the only train we could catch was the Nozomi.
Right.
And it was probably, you know, like $160 to get there in 2.5 hours.
Right.
So it's expensive.
It's pretty quick, though, time frame to get to Kyoto.
It's so exciting. You get on a bullet train and you're like, oh, this is just great fun.
Yeah, because they're like 300 Ks an hour, aren't
they? Yeah. And I think they've even got faster ones than that now.
Right, okay. Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, I love train travel, slow or fast.
Yeah.
And then sometimes, like, we were staying in the mountains, so you're taking one little train and another little train and...
So, so at the mountains outside of Kyoto, is that right?
Or? Actually, we went into the Gifu Prefecture.
Okay.
So, from Kyoto, it is actually... we were at Tokyo, Kyoto, and then we did go up to... So it was a few hours.
Okay.
And we went to one of the main towns. There's Gifu, the main city, but then there's another town called Takayama, which actually is realistically pronounced Takayama.
Right.
We were calling it Takayama, but it's actually Takayama.
And that was causing some confusion amongst the locals.
It was. So what we did was that is the main town, and then we rented cars from there and we drove up into the mountains. About 40 minutes out of there into an area called Hida, H-I-D-A, and it's a mountainous region. And we rented on Airbnb, this is the amazing thing. Airbnb, you can rent an incredible, we rent a 200-year-old farmhouse.
Right.
And it was a traditional Japanese house. I mean, it had a modern kitchen, but, you know, it had filled with tatami mats, and we slept on tatami mats and futons and, you know, we had onsens every night because it had its own hot tub. And
Well, that sounds nice.
It was really – and then you go out from
there. We have a hot tub here in the studio too.
Do we?
Is that right?
Do you want to step inside your Japanese hot tub?
Let's do
yes,
it.
I would love to.
There we go.
Oh, I can hear the bubbles. I can feel the steam.
Yeah. It's very exciting and relaxing at the same time, isn't it?
Well, I mean, you know, they love relaxing music.
They do, I know. Well, they've basically, you know, with the whole onsen and the spas and all that, they've really shown that the rest of the world how it's done, haven't they? I mean, it's
you could become addicted to onsens,
very easily.
And then there's something else that we developed in the several times I've been. It's called onsen brain.
What? You do, really?
Yeah, you do too many onsens and you begin to forget things, and you like you can't. I once went to an onsen village in Kyushu and I couldn't remember where I left my shoes.
Right,
because I'd been in an onsen village for 2 days.
Make sure it's not the sake. It's just the combination of the two.
Yes, well, you know, when you do some hiking, there's incredibly beautiful hiking in Japan. Yeah. Then you finish the hike and you do and you have a little onsen and then you have a little sake and a beautiful meal.
Yeah.
And well, it's just bliss on a stick.
Yeah, how they get any work done.
I know, exactly.
Well, they work very long hours, actually, in Tokyo and places like that. And everyone has a job. They have very low unemployment.
Wow.
And everyone has a job. So that's another interesting component of Japanese culture.
Joy 94.9 is on air 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. But sometimes you can't always be with us when you want to. Here's the solution. Here's the solution. Listen to your favourite Joy 94.9 show anytime with our Joy podcast service. Our team of over 30 volunteers pick out the best bits from around 60 programs that Joy airs each week, made available to you for free download. To find a podcast of your favourite Joy show, search for us in the Featured Providers section within the iTunes Store, or find them on the Joy website, joy.org.au. Joy Podcasts. Any show, anytime, joy.org.au.
So, Ted, you've been to Japan a number of times.
I have, yeah, and it's always been for work. So I've never, unfortunately, been able to go for a holiday. But whenever I would go, it would always be a two-week work trip. So I'd have the weekends to spend somewhere, you know.
What parts of Japan have you visited?
Everywhere. Like, it's been bizarre.
Oh,
I've pretty
God,
much
really?
Had the opportunity to go everywhere. But I haven't really been able to absorb much of it because most of the time you're you know, on the bullet train or between airports, things like that. So it's a lot different when you're going for work. Mm. And but you get familiar with things.
You do.
But yeah, I've always loved it though. It's been
every
great.
Time I go, I want to go again to somewhere else.
Yeah.
Not this time, but the last time I was in Tokyo, I was in Osaka. I went to a Buto performance, which was amazing. And I've been to a sumo wrestling match, which was incredible.
Very iconic thing to do
fun, but don't go all day because it's actually could be quite boring if you went all day.
That's like anything though, isn't it?
Yeah.
You don't want to overkill, you know.
Well, no, you know, eating in Japan never gets boring.
Well, that, no, for sure, yeah.
So when I was in...
Sorry, and as a vegetarian, there's plenty of things to keep going, or was it a struggle?
I'm a pescatarian.
Ah, of course.
So, you know, in that case, it would be fine. I do believe that as a vegetarian, you would be fine, but as a vegan, you would really struggle.
Right, okay.
They love egg sandwiches.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I ate so many egg sandwiches.
Good like protein.
Good protein. And their bread... fat and fluffy and white and highly processed,
yes,
but delicious. Yeah. and they have perfected this wonderful thing called the three-piece sandwich. So, you know, think of a sandwich as being two slices of bread cut in two so that you've got two pieces.
Right.
No, they have three pieces. So you get
three whole
extra
slices. Okay.
Which is really fun.
Carb.
Wow.
Carb.
I ate a lot of carbs while I was there.
But it's interesting because, you know, I mean, this is a generalization, but Japanese people are usually quite thin.
Well, they're very petite.
Yeah.
Yeah, here's a funny story. Now, I have rather large feet. And not overly large.
No, shopping in Japan.
Not overly large for Australia, but certainly in Japan. And I thought I would have a fun experiment. And I went into a department store and I was like, do you have any shoes for a size 41? And then just watched the young girl go, oh.
She was horrified.
oh no, sorry. And giggle. It was fun to
She's
watch.
She's laughing
them.
At your feet.
Well, she was not laughing at my feet, but well, you know, she was probably embarrassed that she couldn't help me because you know the Japanese are very, very helpful.
Yeah.
And often, I mean, with the language, I mean, of course, a lot of Japanese don't speak English very well, and so it would be every time I go, I try to learn a little bit more, but you know, usually actually that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
But they often, if you ask them something and they don't know the answer, they won't tell you directly no.
Right.
So there are times where you're like, oh, you can't necessarily get the answer that you want because they don't speak enough English, but they don't want to necessarily say, or they don't know how to say they don't speak enough English to explain it.
Right.
So, you
it's
know.
Kind of to save face in a way, you know, or embarrassment or whatever it is.
They'd rather kind of fluff it than admit they don't know.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we didn't have any trouble getting around and, you know, you always seem to make do. I think that obviously there are some niceties that are really beneficial.
Yeah.
I have one wonderful trick for anyone who's on their way to Kyoto. So traditionally, a thank you, of course, is arigato. Mm-hmm. And when I was in Kyoto, not this time, but a couple of years ago, I met a guy sitting in a cafe and he said, in Kyoto, the local parlance and the best way to say arigato is, in fact, okini.
Really?
Yeah, just think like bikini, but okini. Right. And when you are in Kyoto and you say okini, people smile at you.
Right.
They giggle, they laugh, really? They think they're so impressed
that you can say
okini.
Right.
So that's just a little trick for anyone who's going to Kyoto.
We've got actually a few questions for you.
Oh, we have. Yep. Excellent. Oh, my
first
goodness.
One, yep. Is what is your favorite karaoke song?
Well, I did a bit of karaoke when I was here recently, although it was slightly unusual. It wasn't with a machine. We stumbled into a bar, thinking it was this little Mama San bar. So they have these tiny bars on multiple levels.
Yes. Yep.
And you
so
just
narrow, aren't they? Though?
Tiny, yep. You know, as small as a studio, and you can just pop out of the elevator and open the door, and there may not be anyone in there except for the proprietor.
Right,
it could be one person, and usually it's an older lady, maybe with her husband or partner. So we stepped in, and he had a baby grand, and there was all these songbooks lying around with, you know, like a variety of just like plastic sleeves with all these song lyrics. Yep. So it was totally unmechanized.
Right.
And she was encouraging us to sing, and so she encouraged us by getting up and doing a song. Like she had this fabulous sort of 70s pantsuit on. She must have been, you know, a performer, and she had this really deep husky voice. And she was she started out doing a song, and then we thought that we would get involved and we would do a song. And one of the songs we did was The Reels.
Okay,
This Guy's in Love.
Right.
That was really, really fun.
And the husband's playing the baby grand.
Yeah, and the husband's playing the baby grand. The other song I did, which you'll be very happy about, Tad, is one of my favourite songs of all time, is It's Up to You, New York, New York.
Oh, well, there you go.
I know those lyrics.
It's not a karaoke night if someone's not singing that song.
So New York, New York, and the other tracks I've done at karaoke, things like Nico Icon, who has a very deep voice, or a bit of Lou Reed.
Right, okay.
So, I mean, I can't really hit a high note.
Do you want to sample that for us now?
No, probably not, because because my boyfriend recorded the us doing karaoke and then played it back to us the next day. Okay. So I do not want to put anyone through that experience.
Well, that's fair enough, and thank you for saving us on that. There's another question that's come through. How does sushi and sashimi compare to Australia? Is it different?
what I would say is there is a wider variety of fish available with the sushi that you consume. Yes, they still have tuna and that sort of thing. But what I will say is that it's just way nicer. You don't get those cold, solid, horrible blocks of rice that sit on the bottom of your stomach and make you feel sick. The rice is lighter and fluffier and not as densely packed.
Yeah.
It's also not as cold. The sushi we get here seems to be like, well, it's just so pre-prepared. And the pieces of fish you get are probably a little bit almost sort of thinner and more fresh.
Right.
And so I would say it's just a way nicer experience. And in fact, of course, in Melbourne, you can actually get really fabulous, fabulous sushi.
Yeah, you can, for sure.
But what happens is when you're in Japan, there are so many different other types of cuisine that you find that you're not eating nearly as much sushi as you would imagine. Because there's, you know, the ramen and the noodles, and then there's the izakayas, and there's so many different types of cuisines.
Yeah. You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
In the studio with me today is Adam on the tools. Thank you for helping us out today.
Pleasure.
And joining us. And of course, Fiona back on from her trip all the way from Japan and telling us about all her adventures and experiences. And I want to know more about the soba noodles.
Well,
I just love them.
The area of soba is so good.
Mm-hmm. Hot or cold?
I had them both ways, but I'm a bit of a fan of cold.
Yeah, I am too.
It's so refreshing.
It is, especially on a hot day.
Mm.
It wasn't hot, obviously, in Japan necessarily, but it is something that you can still have noodles on a hot day, and it's a refreshing sort of meal. It's quite nice, actually.
Well, I mean, the area we were at up in Hida, they specialized in soba. Soba, of course, is buckwheat noodle as opposed to udon, which is a wheat noodle.
That's also a beef range, the beef rearing area.
It's a very, very popular beef area. Yep. Hida beef is huge.
Yep.
It's like a wagyu-y type style meat. I didn't eat any of it.
No.
But
it does look very marbled.
It is very marbled. And you're having it in very thin slices as well. So it's not as if you're eating giant chunks of it or legs of it.
Yeah.
But the village we were staying at, actually in the farmhouse, there was a beef farm in that area.
Right.
Because you don't see much livestock, really, when you're driving around in Japan.
Right.
And it was a beef growing area, and all the beef are kept indoors mostly.
Really?
Yes.
Why is that?
That's
just the way they do it.
They don't really have grazing land.
Okay.
There's very little arable grazing land in Japan, and it's all used for rice.
Right, of course.
Because it's very mountainous.
Yep.
So I think that they just don't have vast swathes
fields,
so they keep them indoors.
Yeah.
And we actually walked through part of the farm kind of by accident because we were just walking around the back streets of this village. And I had to turn off because it really began to smell bad.
Right.
Even though I was born and raised on a farm.
There was limits to what you could
There's
say.
Limits to the amount of cows I can smell. But it was a specialty of the area.
Right.
There was also the opportunity to learn how to make soba.
Right, okay.
But
it is is an art to doing that, isn't it? And it's
absolutely
passed down from centuries to.
So I would have loved to have done that. But, you know, whenever I go to Japan, I just say, well, next time.
Yeah.
Because I know I'll be back.
Yeah.
One of the other specialties of this area was called hoba miso.
Yeah, tell us about that.
Now, miso, I mean, I'm a big miso fan, but miso is quite strong in flavour and you can only use small amounts of it in cooking. And, of course, you don't actually really cook miso. You add it for flavouring.
For flavouring,
But this hoba miso is, hoba literally means magnolia leaf.
Really?
So dried magnolia leaves are obviously a part of this particular miso. It's a little bit more chunky. It's quite sweet in comparison. Well, when I say sweet, I shouldn't say it's not as salty.
Right.
So not necessarily sweet, but not as salty. And when you have it for breakfast or when on your breakfast plate or with your dinner, they have a tiny little sort of barbecue on one side and then it is a hot plate with a large dried magnolia leaf.
Right.
And the miso is bubbling away there and it's so good. In fact, I brought some home with me, just a little tub of it. of which I'm going to probably eat the whole thing tonight, which was soba noodles that I brought back as well.
No magnolia leaf?
I could have bought back dried magnolia leaves, right. But I didn't, because then I would have needed the small little barbecue.
I'm curious if, I'll have to check, I don't know the answer to this question, but I wonder if the magnolia is native to Japan.
Good question.
Because it's obviously it's a dish that's been around for a very long time, and you know,
I wouldn't be surprised.
Have to look that up.
So when we were there, of course, you know, I mean, Japan has incredible flowers and the cherry blossoms. Oh, yeah. Obviously, not at this time of the year.
Yep.
But when we were there, the autumn leaves were starting to turn slightly in the northern area. And I just could not think of anything better of going back to certain parts of Japan in the autumn.
Because you had mentioned Tokyo was still about 27 degrees, but up in the higher altitudes, it was quite cool.
Quite cool. Yeah. It was sunny days, but, you know, like only 15 to 16 degrees in the mountains.
Yeah.
But Tokyo was hot.
Right.
And it's quite humid, and it rains a lot.
Yeah.
It rains a lot in Japan, from what I could tell.
Yeah, well, it's in the middle of the ocean, so... You know, just a set of islands.
So.
It would, you know, and I think the one, is it the west side that gets more of the rain than the east side, or is it the other way around? I forget which one. But
I'm not sure about that.
Because that's the way the jet stream travels.
So it's just full of the tomatoes. Oh my God, the tomatoes, the cucumbers.
Yeah.
Everything, like, you know, just sliced cucumbers with ponzu dressing.
Right.
As a part of your, you know, you go to an izakaya, you order lots of small dishes.
Yeah.
Sliced tomato with mayonnaise. Ugh, it's so just so simple.
The
but
Japanese
just,
mayonnaise. Is,
the Japanese mayonnaise.
Yeah. So
many delicious and incredible sweets.
Yeah.
You know, you just get addicted to matcha ice cream and the red bean paste balls. And
it's not overly sweet, though, which is nice. You have a dessert sort of like that, and it's not like a hit-in-the-face kind of sugary experience.
Well,
you know
that they're famous for their pastries.
Yes, absolutely, and the perfection of the
The perfection.
Yeah.
I mean, I went into a boulangerie and nearly hyperventilated with the deliciousness of the pastries that they have on offer.
Yeah.
There's not just two or three or four varieties. There's like 20 different pastries.
Yeah.
And that's just in the train station.
Yeah. Imagine our train stations if they had that.
Can you imagine if they had that? I mean, instead of those generic pizzerias and...
Yeah.
Although I must admit, fried chicken was very big on my friend's menu. Fried chicken was ordered, and I think at every meal, well, not every meal, but those meals, it was everyone would say, oh, this is the best fried chicken. And it went on and on and on. Even till last night, they love their fried chicken.
Because they do it well.
They do it well. It is. It's really delicious.
Yeah. I actually just had a look on the Google machine.
Yeah.
Magnolias are from China and Japan and spread across to the West Indies and the United States.
That's amazing, isn't it?
Mm. And it was first named them at the end of the 18th century.
Right.
1730 was when they started, when it was introduced. That's when they discovered it in Asia and then across the rivers. In the Americas, because the Americas were discovered in the 18th century. But mainly they started giving it its name, Magnolia, in China and Japan when they were walking around there.
That's amazing, isn't it?
I'd say walking because they didn't have maglev trains or high-speed bullet trains
back then.
No, not
at that
stage. Just walking around the countryside.
Exactly.
Well, they have some incredible, of course, traditions. So in Takayama, we were there during the Lantern Festival.
Oh.
So this festival happens twice a year in spring and in autumn. And there are, I think, 22 of these incredible floats that are filled with all these beautiful lanterns. They've been going since the 17th century, some of these. So over 300 years they've been doing this particular festival. And they have a parade during the day and then they have they light all the lanterns and they have a parade in the evening, and there are so it was kind of like being at Moomba, but just really beautiful and old. And they had traditional costumes, and it was really that was spectacular.
What's the significance of the festival? Is it to honor the dead, or what is the
you know, that's probably a very good question. I was all excited
about the
I was all excited about the decoration. I wasn't thinking
Google
too
later.
Much. Yeah, well I have a flyer at home for that.
We can bring that in next time.
I can show and fill you in.
I'm actually surprised that Fiona hasn't showed up in a kimono today.
I know.
Well, I actually have bought... Oh, so when we were in Takayama, we found this fabulous secondhand kimono and yukata. So right. the yukata or the yukata is the casual robe that you would wear around the house, and it doesn't have the massive long sleeve. Anyway, we found this antique place, and... I'm a fabric and a collector, so I started hyperventilating and just got all excited. Right. But I have bought, and I just tried it on before I left the house, this beautiful vintage silk crepe kimono that I picked up for like $20.
Right.
Wow.
It is a bit long. I got it as a special deal because there are not enough tall people to wear it.
Right.
But every single one of my friends, and I was traveling with a group of about 8 of us, everyone went in and they got their own kimonos of some kind.
Oh, that's good. It's always good to do that.
And yeah.
It's a special sort of souvenir to take home.
Well, look, I could have bought more, but I had to reason how many kimonos do I really need in my life in Melbourne.
And you'll go back.
And I'll be back.
Yeah, because you have to go to the soba noodle class.
Oh, so many things I have to do again next time.
Yeah, that's good. And there was another dish you had... we talked about during the break, and it was the tofu cheese.
Oh, the tofu cheese, so our last night we were in Tokyo and we found a new neighbourhood. That's the fun thing about Tokyo.
Yeah.
You go and find a new neighbourhood each time, and it was called Koenji. Anyway, we were in Koenji. They had all these fabulous thrift shops. It was obviously, it was kind of like arriving in Fitzroy or something. Yeah. And we were at this izakaya, and I just saw it on the menu and I had to order it. It was tofu, cheese and honey.
Wow. That sounds good.
A pot of silken tofu in a little pot with honey. The jury is still out whether there was any actual cheese in it. But as a girlfriend of mine was telling me, cheese is a state of mind. So,
well, she's not wrong.
Yeah. So that was another special local dish.
Yep. That sounds fascinating. And something that you'd just love to try, you know.
Yeah. But I'm going to get a recipe for it.
Yep. You know what?
We're it's almost time out for of time. A break.
Well, we're almost out of time at the moment.
We've already
flown through, you know. How much fun has that been?
It was really good to do it when it was so fresh in my mind.
Yeah, literally right off the plane, so there's nothing to forget. No, but it's been a great, you know, listening to all your experiences. Thank you for sharing that with us and coming in being so, you know, jet-lagged and...
I'm not jet-lagged. I've had lots of coffee.
Okay. Oh, good. Well, that's good. we will be back next week with the Escape Hour. And,
we will be. We're going to Thailand next week.
That's good.
Yep. So, Tad, you won't be here next week because you will be away.
I will be in New York,
Oh, wow. Well, you'll have to go and visit some new... I want to know all the hot new restaurants in New York.
I can help you with that.
And I want to find out about the hot new neighborhood.
Yes, definitely.
I want you to go to some great gallery, fantastic exhibition.
Yeah. No, we're going to do it all. But... coming up next is Word for Word. Adam, thank you so much for helping us out today.
Thank you, Adam.
And always nice co-hosting with you, Fiona.
Great to co-host with you too, Tad.
Have a good one. Thank you.
Okay, bye.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.